Howdy, folks. Welcome to another edition of the Dogcast here on Dogs Movie House at dogsmoviehouse.com. Hopefully you're a one-stop site for all things movie-related. And this week, we happen to have a couple of new ones for you. The first one I'm going to talk about is a 17 years in the making sequel that I'm not sure anybody wanted, but it is a sequel to one of the most profitable films of all time. This is Adam Wingard's Blair Witch, which premiered at Comic-Con this summer under the pseudo-title The Woods. And apparently it was a big deal that this was an actual sequel to the Blair Witch project way back in 1999. I don't know what I can say about this film other than the fact that if you are a fan of the Blair Witch project, and it's one of your favorite horror movies of all time, you should probably find a good deal to interest you here, in that the filmmakers, Adam Wingard working with a script from Simon Barrett, they happen to use many of the same techniques that made the Blair Witch Project the herald of the found footage craze that has pretty much permeated much of horror fiction from a movie standpoint in the 2000s and beyond. This is a direct sequel to the original, not the unfortunately very, very bad follow-up Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows that came out only a year after the Blair Witch Project hit theaters. This tells the tale of James, who is the very young brother of Heather, who disappeared 20 years ago, according to the mythology. This takes place in 2014. The Blair Witch Project took place in 1994. And he gets some video footage that allows, or that makes him believe that she is still alive. And so he hats up with a bunch of friends, including Cali Hernandez and Corbin Reed and Brandon Scott. They play respectively Lisa, Ashley, and Peter. And they hat up with all sorts of camera stuff because Lisa is doing a documentary for her thesis. This includes ear mics, or excuse me, not just ear mics, but ear cameras, which kind of addresses the pesky need to hold on to a camera while you're running through the woods, and a drone, which probably could have been used a whole lot better in this reviewer's opinion, but adds a different sort of spice to the proceedings. Anyway, when they get there, they are joined by Wes Robinson's Lane and Valerie Curry's Talia, the couple who sent them the videotape, sent James the videotape, I should say, that seems to prove that Heather at least is alive or somewhere still out in the woods. After that somewhat intriguing setup, the film goes predictably as you might think. First night, things start happening, and one of the good things about this particular film is that it sets up the idea of the witch being able to mess with time, space, distances, actually alter the physical environment. There are several sounds at night that are the snapping of huge trees, and I took that to mean after a while that the witch was actually moving the forest around physically so that everything would be different when the daylight showed up. They couldn't get home. There's an intriguing shot where the drone is set up and they can't find the road. So it's clear that the witch has more than just your usual amount of boogeyman powers. The house, the famous house from the original film, appears in this one as well. And it is used to fairly spooky effect, although if you've seen the first Blair Witch, you kind of understand where it's going from there. Again, the spatial relations are odd, whether that's from the shaky cam, or whether or not it's from the witch being able to make the house appear bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. Or I should say bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. That's up for debate. Now, the thing of it is that this probably uses even more shaky cam than the original, which I thought was impossible. The first film, I separate into thirds. The first third is all the exposition, very good. The second third, they get lost in the woods, and that's terrible filmmaking. Lots of shaky cam, lots of profanity, lots of improvised dialogue that doesn't really go anywhere. And that makes that particular part of the original almost unwatchable, at least for me. it picks up, of course, when the first guy disappears and they get to the climax, which is very, very well done. And it seems that the film has a purpose. And a micro-budgeted film, I'm not expecting to see a whole lot. And the idea that the imagination takes hold makes it work for me, at least in the last third of the film. Now, I know a lot of people who I respect who absolutely hated the first film, and if you're one of those, stay away from this sequel, because it's more of the same. It's a little more frustrating, because we are promised that we will see the witch. We will see more. Unfortunately, Wingard, who's a talented filmmaker, if you watch movies like The Guest or Your Next, which are pretty decent, if not derivative films, shows that he has a tendency to hew a little bit too closely to the original techniques of the original film. He's got a bigger budget, but aside from a couple of set pieces, he only uses them sparingly, and that makes it a little bit difficult for us to get involved. The acting's fine for what it's worth, but you never really get to know any of these characters. It's more about the popping and the sound design, which is, like the first film, very well done. But you don't have anything to really latch on to. The finale, the witch, good luck in finding out exactly what she looks like. You get a couple of glimpses of her, but they're more like blips on the radar. Because of the way the camera moves, it's there and it's gone. It's there, it's gone. Or did we see it, or did we see anything? That kind of thing. Those questions will pop into your mind at a moment's notice, and it's a little bit difficult to take this movie seriously as other than an exercise in jump scares. And there are plenty to be had, but when you walk out, you'll feel a little bit cheated. I can almost guarantee it. I'm giving this one 2.5 out of 5 on the old Barkometer, simply because it's fairly well made, but the shaky cam and lack of payoff really knock it down on the totem pole. Now, the other wide release this week was Oliver Stone's Snowden. And talk about a polarizing figure. This is based on the life of Edward Snowden, the CIA contractor who leaked tons of government secrets out into the public and had to flee to Russia, of all places, to keep himself from being charged with treason. Now, this is right up Oliver Stone's alley. He directed and co-wrote the script with Kieran Fitzgerald, and this is from the book by Anatoly Kucharina and Luke Harding. And this features a bravura performance by Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Edward Snowden. This is a very well-made movie. This is a very well-thought-out movie. My primary complaint in this, though, is that Oliver Stone attempts to canonize, I think, Snowden in this particular case, even to the point of bringing the real Snowden into the proceedings toward the end of the film. All hail the conquering hero, the idealist, the crusader for freedom and rights. And I can understand why he would think that way, because Stone's always been a sucker for the so-called underdog. But this particular bit of history deserves, I think, a more balanced effort. In the cast, you have Zachary Quinto as the journalist Glenn Greenwald. You have Melissa Leo as Laura Poitras, who was a documentary filmmaker. If you've ever watched Citizen 4, the documentary about Snowden, you'll see a lot of the similar scenes from that recreated meticulously with the actors. It's very well done. In this particular case, this is pretty much Joseph Gordon-Levitt's show, although he does get great support from Shailene Woodley as Lindsay Mills, his I wouldn't call it long-suffering girlfriend, although there's certainly some of that in there, but his balancing point. Very liberal. She comes to realize the toll that the jobs that he takes that gives him more and more security clearance and eventually disillusions him into making decisions that he does. She's his rock of Gibraltar, even though they have some fairly up-and-down moments. You get good work from Timothy Oliphant. Nicolas Cage shows up as Hank Forrester, kind of his mentor and conscience. The idea behind it, this film, tells a tale from the time that he is trying to train for Special Forces in 2004 all the way up to his interview in London and beyond in 2013. Again, a little bit too biased on the side of Snowden in this particular case, for my taste. You have Ryze Ifans as Corbin O'Brien, who is he's a mustache away from being a mustache-twirling CIA villain. Everybody in the government are black hats, or at least subtle black hats. And it kind of makes for me, it takes away from the experience for me. Now, if you're, no matter what your feelings on Snowden, it's still a film worth looking at. To be honest with you, I love the idea of how Stone brings us into the age of surveillance. And I know one of the big bugaboos that they concentrate on is the fact that the NSA and the CIA can activate laptop cameras without the computer even being on. I could be being watched right now, although I probably look pretty goofy here with my microphone. But as far as the surveillance stuff is concerned, I like the ins and outs, but I wish they would have addressed the other side of it, the pros of it, the reasoning behind doing this, more than just kind of the black hat, you know, government wants money sort of thing that seems to be a staple here. But other than that, it's very well made, and again, Gordon Leavitt is terrific. He really embodies both the smarts and the insecurities of Snowden in a way that's very sympathetic, despite your feelings toward the real, or what your feelings toward the real Snowden may be. Definitely worth your while. I'm giving this one 3.5 out of 5 on the Barkometer. On our next Dogcast, we'll probably be going back a ways to some of the movies that I haven't missed, or that I have missed, while trying to get this site up to snuff, including movies like Sully and Hell or High Water, and of course other features. Feel free to watch the clips below, and feel free to comment. And as always, thank you for listening to the Dogcast here on Dogs Movie House at dogsmoviehouse.com. And we will see you next time on the next Dogcast. So saith the Ken Dog.